Can I get a papaya with blue flags, please and thank you? Welcome back to Motorsport 101.
Yes, we are not a visual medium, and if you ask Carlos Sainz, neither are blue flags.
Apparently so. Welcome to episode 675 of Motorsport 101. I'm your friendly neighborhood host, Dre Harrison. Glad you could join us from a hot as balls West London right now. It is 9 p.m. at night. It is 27 degrees Celsius as I record this episode. It's sweaty as shit, but we're going to get through it. Because if the F1 drivers can get through a Hungarian Grand Prix in the peak of summer, then so can I. So we'll get covering that as, hey, Do you remember that Lando Norris is the reigning world champion? It's very easily forgettable the way this season's played out so far until he reminded us of his class by whooping the field's arse in Hungary thoroughly over an open fire in Hungary. And that was a dominant victory, but not in the way you might expect, because this is McLaren and they have to make a Horlicks out of it somehow. So we'll talk all about that. We've got, hey, surprise, Red Bull finishes second again because Max Verstappen will go to hell kicking and screaming. All of that. And we've got the Ferrari's mess. We've got Antonelli shithousing a podium in a really not competitive Mercedes this weekend. Aston Martin doesn't totally suck anymore. That's a plus. We'll talk about the state of the midfield as well. Joining me, and it's just the one guest this week because RJ is flying to Chicago as we speak. It's Mr. Cameron Buckley. Hello, Cam.
Hello, everyone. I've been staring at these Road America Porsche liveries for a day now, and they still tickle my soul. They're great.
It's impressive. He was able to open his bedroom door to record this episode without being able to use his hands. It was very impressive.
Oh, without even moving. I didn't even have to get out of bed.
Yeah. It's the Donald Duck meme picture all over again. To be fair, they are filthy liveries, and
RF Spider is risen.
I'm a good
My
friend.
Childhood is back.
I'm a good friend with someone who does a lot of the PR work for Porsche in their motorsport department, and I sent her a message the other day saying, "I'm not sure if it's legal for you to post that kind of filth on the timeline before 10 p.m."
It's quite amazing. It's like every throwback livery they've done this year is just cooking in the archives because they've all been excellent.
Banger after banger after banger. More bangers than Sheamus in the WWE. It's incredible. They've just been able to get hits again and again and again. They've all been tremendous this season from Porsche. And those two for Road America this weekend are absolutely no exception. Gorgeous stuff. So, well worth a mention. Right, places you can find this real quick. We're on youtube.com/motorsport101. We're on facebook.com/motorsport101. We're on Twitter at motorsport_101. If you want to follow the pod, upon host personally, you can on Twitter at DreHarrison101, at CBuckley917. Dre Harrison and CBuckley917 also on Blue Sky. You can follow RJ at RJ O'Connell, his literal name. How helpful. We've been able to sync up the Instagram and TikTok accounts. The TikTok account's been renamed. So Instagram and TikTok, the video highlights of the show, are now at Motorsport101Pod. They are exactly the same now. So it's nice and uniform. It's easier to remember. There you go. So if you want video highlights of the show and bonus content from yours truly, you can visit both of our Instagram and TikTok pages at Motorsport101Pod to follow us on there. You can also check out the website, motorsport101.com, where I reviewed all of this race with my usual bombastic style. And, of course, you can back us financially on Patreon, patreon.com/motorsport101. You can follow us at the $5 level to get early access to all of our content, or you can upgrade to the $10 level to listen to these episodes live as they're being recorded, as Vic, Jason, and Raptor are doing so right now. Thank you very much for your ongoing support. Much appreciated. Right, without further ado, let's get into the Hungarian Grand Prix. If there's one thing you can say about Hungary, it's that it never quite runs how you think it will. Lando Norris took pole position by just 12 thousandths of a second over Lewis Hamilton's Ferrari, but grid penalty shook up the field after Lewis was penalised for impeding Oscar Piastri in Q3. Pretty stonewall penalty, if you ask me. While Kimi Antonelli was also demoted 3 places for not lifting enough in a yellow flag after Max Verstappen spun out at the end of the session. That was a messy one, by the way. In the race itself, Lando Norris made a mistake at turn 2 and let teammate Oscar Piastri lead the early running. The race did actually turn into a free stop due to tyre deg, and in their second round of stops, Piastri was given papaya rules priority, trademark of course, to pit first, but on his out lap he was hit-checked by Carlos Sainz, who claimed he didn't see Piastri despite the blue flags on track. Genius. McLaren boxed Lando after the carnage and came out in front, and from there dominated the rest of the running. Lando wins the Hungarian Grand Prix by 15 seconds, his 12th victory in F1, and the first time he's actually won at a track more than once. He had this strange streak of 11 wins in 11 different places, as you do. He finished ahead of Max Verstappen in second, who managed a 29-lap soft stint to get to the flag, while Kimi Antonelli managed a two-stopper race of his own to get home in third, ahead of both Ferraris. Well, Cam, as said, Hungary's sort of a magical F1 track, and no matter what we think is going to happen at the Hungarian Grand Prix, it never quite goes the way you think it does, and this was no exception. Like, I mean, I don't think anybody had Oscar Piastri leading the entire first half of this race.
No, and the form book was kind of all over the place throughout the weekend, where for much of practice and qualifying, it looked like this was going to be a Ferrari suiting round. It's slower speed, they don't have to rely on top speed as much, and of course, Lando pips them right at the end of Q3 to go on pole.
Mm.
But it's weird, because this race felt very traditional boring Hungary,
yeah,
where track position was king. We really didn't get any yo-yo racing here, as we call it these days, because the dirty air was so strong. But at the same time, the tires would seem to degrade for the first 10 laps or so, just linearly, and then they would just stop dropping off. It was like the old 2010 Bridgestones almost, where if you could get through that phase, you could actually live with the tire no matter the compound. So the soft, medium, and hard were all kind of equally bad in that sense.
Yeah, and if they're all equally bad, you might as well go on the soft because of the extra grip, in theory. And most of the field didn't figure that out until the very end, when Max does that 29-lap soft stint at the end. And even Max was like, GP, you sure this is going to work? Because these tires feel like shit. And then GP is like, just trust me, Max. And yeah, it does. It worked out perfectly in the end. I think Gabriel Bortoleto did a very long soft stint early on as well. Just missed out on points. But I think in hindsight, if they'd actually gone back and done this race again, it would have absolutely probably been a one-stop race by just starting on the softs and just staying with them for as long as you could. Because once you got past this almost a graining-esque phase like we got in the early 2010s, like, once you got through that hump, you were good. You were fine. You could just keep going. It was really odd.
Yeah, it's like half the field discovered fire halfway through the race as they realized they could open up strategies, because this was feeling very traditional Hungary, where if you start somewhere and you go conservative on strategy, you're probably going to stay there. We saw that especially with Kimi Antonelli's race. We'll expand on him a little bit later.
Mm.
But the man of the hour, someone who's been kind of silent since that Miami burst, where he really could have won that race, Lando Norris put belt to ass the second half of this race.
It's one of those where when Lando is feeling it, he is impossible to beat. Like, he's got an incredible high ceiling as a driver. He seems to like it when races get rough, when they're high tire deg races, and he can skip on his rear tires on low grip situations, because The back half of this race, Lando was half a second faster than everybody else that prepared to move, and he was a second a lap faster than his teammate Piastri, which, like, I think this has actually been a little bit telling of the two of them in partnership in race pace this season, that when the going got tough, Lando Norris has shown his class far more than Piastri has this season, because this was an arse whooping from Norris in the back half. And that once that runaway train got going, nothing was going to stop it. Just complete dominance.
Yeah, I hate to think regarding Oscar Piastri, because it feels like he's been MIA for a year now. It really does. Like, middle of last year forward, the brilliance that he started 2025 with has really waned. And I hate to think that last year's McLaren really spared his blushes, because we know last year's McLaren, it was just cracked on tire wear, especially on the rear rubber. It would protect the rear rubber so well that they could basically fight tooth and nail and they would not be able to burn the tires out. And that really helped out Piastri. Now that the McLaren is sort of average on tire wear, it looks like 2024 again, where Lando has this definitive stint advantage over Oscar. And McLaren brought a pretty far-reaching upgrade to this weekend, about three major parts all working in concert along the floor. And it definitely took them a step forward compared to where they've been, because they've been kind of all over the place in that fight behind the works Mercedes.
Yeah.
And the only person who could keep him in sight whatsoever in terms of actual pace in the second half of the race was Kimi. But then Kimi started so far down that he was in damage limitation trying to get back up the field.
Yeah, they had to get quirky with Kimi to get him back into play. But yeah, like, I fully agree. It's like, I feel like maybe that's, like you said, the 2025 McLaren maybe flattered Piastri a little bit with all that rear grip that he had, because it just let him just push relentlessly. Just
wouldn't chew the tires up.
Yeah, wouldn't
you? Even when Red Bull implemented the greatest upgrade, the second greatest upgrade, now that Aston Martin has their B-spec car, we have to say. More on that later. Even then, the McLaren had tire wear in their pocket, even if the Red Bull was faster in that final third of the season. It's really rough, because Oscar was handed pretty much every advantage he could have had. The clean air, the great start, McLaren being very good here in the suiting their car and their upgrade.
And
he just got shot to pieces by Lando in the second half.
Yeah, shit's wild. Like, it's... I've not seen a disparity between the pair of them that big, probably in the entire time they've been teammates. Maybe Mexico last year, when Lando was just in a completely different universe to Piastri all weekend.
I would argue that's probably Lando's best weekend in Formula One.
Yeah, like Lando was untouchable all weekend from start to finish, and he wins that by what, half a minute? And that day, no one was like Max Verstappen's the best driver in the world. He had to start that race from Jamaica. There was no chance of him winning that one. But yeah, like, as soon as Lando got that clear air, we were done here, and it showed. Like, there was no one else in the same ballpark whatsoever. You forget. When he's dialed in like that, he is so unbelievably fast. That's why he ended up winning the world championship last year, because when that car is dialed in, Lando's as good as anybody in F1. And you know, I think he's driven like this for a lot of this season. I just don't think he's been getting the front page news. He's not had the car to show it, and I don't think he's got the... I don't think he's had the front page headlines, because it's felt more like Mercedes versus Ferrari for most of this season, with some Verstappen cameos here and there. Like, that's been the bigger story. Obviously, Hamilton winning in Spain. I think, for example, Hamilton wins in Spain. Lando Norris was right there shadowing the Mercedes all the way home. That was a stellar drive. We just didn't talk about it very much. Miami.
We saw it in Belgium. We saw it in Belgium, where Lando had to start from much deeper in the forest than normal in Spa. And he went sawing through that field up until that disastrous pit stop. Because his speed was good enough that he probably ends up probably second that race, second or third, on raw pace. So the McLaren is recovering. It does still feel like it has major shortcomings. It feels like all four front running cars have some major weakness. With Mercedes, it's reliability. With Ferrari, it's pick a topic on a different weekend. We'll talk about them in a little bit. And McLaren are starting to upgrade their way out of that hole. My only concern for McLaren, and this is to touch on Mercedes weekend, is that Mercedes just hasn't done very much development on their car. There was the one big package in Canada and then little bits and pieces since. It feels like there's a lot more in that if they want to push the issue this year, but that's up to them ultimately.
It's an interesting place to be in. I mean, we've said it before, and I'll say it again as we segue over here nicely. McLaren's issue is not their car and their technical program. Their development has been on point for the last 2.5 years. That's why they're the reigning constructors champions. They've been brilliant internally at getting upgrade packages to sync with this car and just developing beat sticks. The problem this year, and again, this reminds me a little bit of Canada, we had questionable McLaren team management again here by Andrea Stella on the pit wall, because for the first half of that race, until the second round of stops, Piastri is leading the race, but Lando Norris is within half a second of him most of the time around Hungary. Now, look, part of this is obviously Norris's fault because he made a mistake at turn two on the opening lap and let Piastri past him. So, of course, well, you know, dirty air, it's Hungary. We know the score. You need a huge delta.
We need a big delta here.
Yeah, you know, well over a second, I'd argue, a lap to be able to make that work. And we saw Lando Norris, you know, genuinely ask the question, hey, am I allowed to undercut him here? And then his race engineer, Will Joseph, under the best in the business, is basically telling him we're not allowed to do that, which implies good old papaya rules. Priority goes to the leading car, and that was Piastri. And a lot of people have been saying, "Oh, it's like it's rigged. The treatment's been rigged again in Norris's favor." No, this was the optimal strategy. The undercut in Hungary is almost always worth 2 or 3 seconds. It always has been. That's why Piastri came in first. It's just the unfortunate event of Carlos Sainz being a prick has unfortunately
being a little bit light on him. Honestly, that was. Look, I have a lot of time for Carlos Sainz as a driver. That is one of the dumbest things I've ever seen him do, and he has a few of those.
Yeah, like, it's that. Look, Oscar Piastri has a reputation of being a very calm and collected driver, even in very, very tricky situations and climates. That was the most I've ever heard him crash out. He just straight up called Carlos a fucking idiot. And then after the race is over, he's in the media pen with Sky Sports, and he's basically says, I don't care what his excuse was. I can't believe he was fighting Fernando Alonso like it was a place for the world championship. That's about the dumbest thing I've ever seen anybody do on track. That's Oscar Piastri saying this. Mr. Mild-mannered. It's like what Richard Hammond thinks he is on Top Gear. 5'11", mild-mannered. What?
Oops. Yeah, and unfortunately, Oscar would then be lost from the race from a reasonably safe P2. Gearbox went boom.
That would have been...
Not the first McLaren gearbox to go boom this year either. So we have one pop over in Canada as well.
It's an easy second place for Oscar if he just finishes with that gearbox. I know he was getting blown out by Norris by that point, but it's still likely going to be a 1-2, maybe 1-3 at the absolute worst. But
it's big points in the constructors in that sort of fight for P2, 3, and 4.
Yeah, because Red Bull's coming back. McLaren's started to get some form together now. And Ferrari have been a bit mediocre for the last couple of weekends, but we'll touch on that next. I mean, it frustrates me as someone who likes to think he's got a working brain as a racing fan. And it was proven right after the mistake happened and McLaren took advantage of it, put Lando in afterwards, and then Lando came out in front. And then Lando's gapping Piastri by a second the lap. As far as I'm concerned, your first priority should be win the race. Don't think about... If you've got the luxury to think about the 1-2, then great, awesome. Worry about that later. But your first priority should be to win the Grand Prix. And Piastri's pace was so off the boil, it was actually keeping Max Verstappen in range for a potential undercut, because he was only about 2.5-3 seconds back towards the end of that second stint, and you were keeping Max in play for an undercut to jump you in the pit. Like...
To an extent, yes. The bigger threat, as we saw later on, was Kimi going long, bolting on fresh tires at the end, and he was coming at that podium fight like a bat out of hell before Oscar's car broke.
Yeah, yeah. There was nothing for him to chase after that broke at the end, and then Kimi got caught up fighting Lewis Hamilton towards the end of the race. Because, well...
It probably ends up where he finished anyway.
Yeah, it's just... McLaren would rather play Happy Families than win a Grand Prix. Because the blatant move is you undercut Norris and you put the faster man out in front. Obvious.
I think they are... Zach Brown is absolutely obsessed with what people think of him.
He wants to be... You know that scene when Lionel Hutz goes, imagine a world without lawyers, and it's everybody peacefully holding hands in a circle saying, yeah, come by up. That's what Zach that's Brown what wants his team to look like. Yeah.
And the thing is, you can do that when you've got a crushing car advantage like you did in the first two thirds of last year. You can't do that when you've got Max Verstappen bearing down on you, as we saw at the end of last year. They tried everything in their power to blow that championship last year. And this year, I mean, ultimately, there's nothing to really play for because they are way out of the driver's title this year. They are nowhere in that
fight. That's not happening.
But it's just...
But that,
for
me...
They're so scared of pissing off one driver or the other that they are willing to lose races on it.
But for me, that's all the more reason why you should be prepared to break protocol, because, one, you're not competing for a world championship this year. At least we don't think they will be. Unlikely they close down the Constructors' Championship unless something miraculous happens down the stretch. They're not competing for a driver's title. Your priority is go win this race, because you might not get another chance to win a Grand Prix this year. We don't know how this field's going to play out with these new cars, new regs, new tracks, new conditions. Like, even we were told by friends inside our Discord and close circle of friends and friends of friends, McLaren was surprised they were this good this weekend. They did not think they were coming to Hungary with a car that could win the Grand Prix outright on merit, especially by 15 seconds in the end. Like, they did not think they were going to be challenging for a victory. They could have had a 1-2.
They should have had a 1-2. In spite of their own stupidity.
Yeah, like, and they very nearly brought hell upon themselves with the insistence that they don't want to rock the boat. And this is what leads to the fan bases bitching on social media one way or the other that their favorite driver's being screwed, and that this whole mentality of we're being as fair as possible, even though fairness is a very subjective term, that, you know, how far does that fairness stretch? We saw that last year.
Fairness is inherently unfair once you get to that stage. Is it fair that Lando is under threat from the car behind him because you don't want to put him the car ahead when he's clearly faster?
Yeah, I don't get what the logic was here besides trying to play Happy Families and keeping Piastri sweet, even though his car was an anchor out there by comparison. If you want to win the race, the best chance of you doing so is having the faster man out in front. And Lando Norris was way quicker on Sunday. Way quicker. All you're doing is you're cutting off your own nose to spite your face, as my old man used to say. I just find it baffling. Like, I've said it before, and I will say it again. Andrea Stella is the best technical team boss in Formula One right now. He's done a tremendous job developing and turning McLaren from contenders, and their rapid ascent to Constructors Championships has been tremendous. No one's faulting him there. He's done a fantastic job leading that team. They need a pit wall guy. They badly need a pit wall guy. They are getting one, but probably not for another year and a half, which is just baffling that, you know, Like, at this point, Zach, you might as well spend the couple of mil if it's not against the cost cap and see if you can get him in early. Because you're hemorrhaging points via your own stupidity. The two times McLaren have had opportunities to win Grand Prix, the pit wall has fucked him. This was one of those occasions where it could have done. Canada was the other when they made the baffling decision to stay on the intermediates. It's a collective amount of stupidity from the McLaren pit wall, and they should know better.
We're going to play so fair that we're going to keep both cars on the wrong tire instead of hedging our bets with one.
Yeah, it's the Indiana Jones scene from The Last Crusade, and my man's got the religious guy holding up in the boat in The Last Crusade. This is your last chance. No, Dr. Jones, it's yours, or we both die. And then that's what McLaren ends up thinking, and it just baffles me. It's infuriating to watch them. Someone who wants to be a strategist. It makes my head spin.
It's weird seeing it in a Formula One team, because usually F1 teams are ruthless to the point where they will absolutely just screw over one driver in favor of the other if it means you win the race.
Mm.
And it should feel refreshing, but instead it's just dumb.
Is that not the most McLaren branding exercise of them all? Like, once upon a time, we enjoyed Zak Brown and his breath of fresh air, his marketing. Well, look, I did. I'll hold my hand up to this. I thought Zak Brown was a breath of fresh air when he first landed F1, because we came off the back of Ron Dennis and the corporation and the fucking boring nature of McLaren and their fans. I'll give Zak this. He is a fantastic marketer. Can't deny that. He's brilliant at what he does. And I can't stand
marketing
marketing
so hard. He's marketing so hard, he just got Scott Dixon away from Ganassi.
Yeah. He's very good at telling people what they want to hear. He's very good at that classic marketing gump that used car salesmen come out with to help to convince you to get your rust bucket going. He's a brilliant marketer. He shits at running a race team. And he should be hiring the people that know what they're doing. And Stella's got the technical part down pat. They need someone who can manage the race from the pit bull. Where's Will Courtenay in all of this? They spent money getting him from Red Bull to be their new race strategy head. Who read the room on this? Who thought this was a good idea?
I tend to think whoever they hire, it's not going to matter while Zak is calling the shots. I'm going to be real with you.
I hope not, because if they have another title battle with someone that's worth a damn, they're going to get hosed on decisions like this. Like, we will look back on weekends like this and laugh at their incompetence. It's baffling that they're still doing this. Moving down my
shall
list.
Shall we talk about the world's angriest second place?
Max Verstappen sounded like he hated everything about that Red Bull this weekend. He fucking couldn't stand it. I mean, the usual, like, oh, the downshifts are bad. That one's on the bingo card by now. It comes up so frequently. It's like, oh, yeah, there's Verstappen on the downshifts. Tick that one off the list, yeah. That's the usual, but then he spins in qualifying. So did his teammate, Isaac Hadjar. He had a bitch fit about the state of the aerodynamics on the car and how the car felt to drive. He did not like it at all. He was ranting and raving all day long about how the car felt, about how he suffered what he called car deck over the course of the race, where it's like if he drove over a curb or something like that, he felt like the car wasn't working as well as he normally did. And despite all that, Cammy finishes second.
He finished P2, and he has, I would say, front runner for overtake of the year, as he tore Lewis Hamilton's heart clean out of his chest into turn one.
That was, you just got your lunch money stolen. That's what that was. That was brutal. He said himself.
That was the kind of pass you watch like this, because you think it's going to end like it did in 2024, but no, he pulled it off this time.
Yeah, it was a double overtake. He had to get past, I think it was Arvid Lindblad's racing bull as well. That was Lawson, there you go. So it was the other racing bull. He took a 2-for-1, and basically, I think Max said on the podium when they were replaying it, and she was showing it to Kimi Antonelli, he obviously hadn't seen it at the time. He said to Kimi, it was my only chance to get him back, because he knew Hamilton had just passed him the lap before. And the attitude was, well, if he stays in front now, then I've lost him. So he had to come back at him. And he did, and he got him, and it was a perfect dive bomb at the turn one apex. It was a beautiful move from Max. Like, it sounds so obvious to say, but he really is just the best F1 driver in the world right now, because he is pulling out miracles in this thing.
Yeah, it's not necessarily that the RB22 is slow, but it is very, very tricky to drive. We've heard this story before with Red Bull. Mm-hmm. But it feels like when he can force the car to be in the window, he can make it work. He can still be Max Verstappen. I mean, we saw it in Belgium, because he was going to finish probably a distant P2 until that VSC happened. He is pulling results out of it that the car probably doesn't deserve on its current balance. And he is, it's weird. Isaac Hadjar looks like the best number two that Red Bull's had in ages. And then you look at the gap between them. It's actually bigger at time. It's bigger than it was to Tsunoda at major points of last year. But we've got so much more field spread this year that being 4.5 tenths off of Max in race trim is only really keeping him, sorry for saying it, 6th to 7th, as opposed to out of the points.
I'm not doing the hand gesture, but yes, I mean, that's...
Yeah.
You're right in the...
Like, he is torching another teammate.
Yeah, like, it's... On paper, it looks bad. But the thing is that one, Red Bull doesn't have the ceiling that it's had with previous Red Bulls, where Max can fight for wins on a regular basis, because he can't do that right now with this current car. So him being 4.5 times behind actually probably isn't as bad when the midfield is so congested right now. And on top of the fact, you can see on track, Hadjar is more than prepared to play the team game. And as we found out in previous years, one, Red Bull really likes that. And two, Sergio Perez probably got himself 2 extra seasons of goodwill for how much he was prepared to help Max in 2021.
Like, 100%.
Like, I was told towards the end of my time at the Motorsport Network that basically, because Checo took like 6 or 7 seconds, pardon the pun, out of Lewis Hamilton in Abu Dhabi in that infamous 2021 race, Red Bull was like, give him a new contract, because it was just like, we need someone like that who's prepared to go all right. in to support
If he doesn't
Max.
Do that, if he doesn't do that, then Mercedes can pit Lewis and not lose the position regardless. And then Max is covered either way. But yeah, Red Bull's in a really weird place right now, but Max is just driving the shit out of that car, getting whatever there is available, to the point where the car is spitting him out for it. It spit Hadjar out in Q3 as well.
The good news is, it looks like the more talk I see about it, the more it looks like Max is going to stay.
I thought if he was going to leave, he was going to leave F1. I don't think he's going to go to another team. And I think this first year with this in-house engine has been good enough. Like, he can't go to Mercedes, they're locked in. He can't go to Ferrari, they're locked in. McLaren at this point is a lateral move.
Yeah, like, the way I see it, there was never really a viable option anyway. But I mean, if you saw the talk from his manager, Thomas Vermeulen, he made it very clear going out of this weekend that, look, we've got a contract until 2028, yes. We are aware that we have this performance clause is now activated where, you know, Max can leave. He's got till October to tell Red Bull whether he wants to leave at the end of the season. But the way Thomas was talking, they're probably not going to activate that clause and they're going to stick around, because they've made it very clear Max wants to see out his contract. If anything, the rumors I heard from a friend of mine over at Crash was Red Bull have allegedly, according to Bild as well, they've offered Max a new deal with an extra year on it to keep him there till 2029, but to get rid of the performance clause, and in exchange, they pay him more up front, basically. Where it's like,
if you're Red Bull, you take that deal. If you're Max, maybe you take that deal. But in Formula One, I don't think that there's a move that gets him up the grid that happens right now, because, I mean,
his best chance is right here.
His best chances here. I mean, unless George Russell continues to go through the terrible, no good, very bad promised title year. Because, oh my God. We haven't said anything about him thus far.
Yeah, it's a perfect segue. I mean, look, like, it's before we talk about Kimi Antonelli and the other Mercedes for a minute here, George Russell, who looked a bit struggly going through qualifying. I think he qualified originally seventh.
And Mercedes in general. Mercedes struggled. Good in race pace. They had a terrible qualifying.
Yeah, like Antonelli got dinged for not backing off enough when Verstappen spun out going through his yellow zone. I checked the stewards' documents on this. Yes, he did ease off 14 meters earlier than he normally did, but he actually accelerated again through the middle of the accident zone to the point where he was going quicker through it than the previous best he'd done beforehand.
Hey, slow in, fast out. You silly man.
So he got dinged three places for a yellow flag infringement. And then George Russell has his ICE crack, which leads to a water leak. And he had to get a whole new power unit put in for Sunday. He's already on his fourth ICE after 11 weekends. He's going to take penalties, probably multiple, between now and the end of the year at some point.
Pretty much everyone up the grid who isn't in a Ferrari is on track for that right now.
Yeah, it's not an ideal situation right now at all. And then in the race itself, it seems that, he hit the anti-stall, hit coming off the grid, and I think the race did a very good job explaining, because I think Kimi spotted him and he saw it on replay, what happened to it. Allegedly, when you're spooling the turbo on the ICE before the race starts, if it charges the battery to the point that it's full, it can trigger the anti-stall, is seemingly what happened there. With George off the line, he gets a dreadful start. I think he drops to 15th off the line. And at Hungary, that might as well be a death sentence.
Yeah, his race was over.
Yeah, it was just...
He was beefing with Fernando Alonso.
It's just another wretched weekend for George, and it's hard to really put full accountability on George again this time round. It's a nightmare scenario for him. I think he's now something like 60, 70 points behind Antonelli now as we hit the halfway point of the year. Well, sort of halfway point. We'll cover that at the end of the show as well. But because we've got some very interesting calendar news to get through as well. But George is in trouble, Cam, and like even with the bad luck, if you want to be really harsh about George, you could say Antonelli's luck has only been slightly better than George's, and he's still 60 points in front of him. That's the issue.
We'll talk about the race pace, the trace of their lap times in race trim. Antonelli's performed him 9 times thus far compared to the 1 for Russell. It kind of doesn't matter what happens luck-wise, reliability-wise. If you can't reverse that trend, it's all kind of for naught. That's not sustainable. You can't be outperformed 9-1 on the year thus far. No. And the killer for George is that this looked like it was going to be a relatively bad weekend for Kimi. They put him off strategy. They put him off sequence. And then the VSC actually works out in such a way, and this can segue into our Ferrari, whatever the hell this weekend was out of the Scuderia. Antonelli ends up, somewhat fortunately, racing his way back into P3 by just being extremely strong in the second half and having great pace on that final set of hard tires. Antonelli's race goes from a probable P5 to the podium.
Yeah. Being aggressive, taking the two-stop option. Kimi had great pace in the back half of that race, and they got...
Only person in Lando Norris's ballpark.
Yeah, and he was doing it on a two-stop strategy, which normally means you've got to be slower to compensate for the lack of stops. So despite that, Kimi once again, a great damage limitation job to get P3 out of it, and a net gain, really, because the two men in front of him are not title rivals at the moment. So
exactly. You take those. If you win the titles on a bad day, that's a pretty good bad day, and he had to make that.
Yeah. He's an outcast.
Dre, the kid's ticking too many boxes.
There's been very little to criticize of Kimi's season so far. He still makes occasional reckless mistakes, like we talked about it in Austria before with some of the struggles with his brakes and His race clock is a little ropey. He's been caught napping a few times off the line here and there as well. There's niggles here. There's no doubt about it. He's far from perfect. But when it matters, the big stuff, he's ticking through every box. He's fast in dry conditions. He's great in qualifying. His race pace is excellent. You can go off sequence and make it work that way. He is blossoming into a world champion in real time. And he's done a magnificent job.
Well, I'll point to that final stint where he comes out. He, in theory, gets screwed by that VSC for Piastri's gearbox failure.
Mm.
Because Lewis Hamilton pits on the VSC and comes out just behind at the line for the VSC for the re-entry point.
Right.
Lewis gets ahead. He has to give the position back. But you think, oh, Lewis is on soft, brand new softs, brand new used softs, let's say.
Mm.
He's going to get Kimi immediately because the tire offsets Massa, and he doesn't. Kimi planted his feet, and the line stopped where he did. Remember the Gohan Cell fight?
Yes.
It's like when Gohan puts up the arm and stops Cell's kick dead.
Yeah.
And you go, oh, shit.
Yeah, this is a problem.
Held his nerve against the person who is most likely to beat everyone's ass around the Hungaro ring.
Yeah, this was Hamilton going for his 10th Hungary pole. I think his 9th win there, if he was able to pull it off. It's arguably Lewis's best track. It's right up there with his ace in the whole rounds. And it was another sloppy Ferrari, and Lewis in particular, it was another sloppy weekend. It was a weekend where the qualifying impeding was Stonewall, completely obvious penalty. The engineer doesn't tell him Piastri's coming, which is weird because he overtook Piastri on his outlap setting it up. So he had to have known there'd be a McLaren coming in hot because they came out off sequence and they started their laps late in qualifying. So you knew that Piastri was likely going to come past you if he was on a hot lap, and you completely missed it. It's unacceptable. And then in the race, he gets caught speeding in the pit lane again.
This is what, the second time in three races for Lewis where he's gone over in the pit lane.
Second in five, because he did it in Monaco as well.
It's weird because this year Ferrari feels like the bizarro Ferrari. Mm. Where they've generally been executing the hell out of weekends and coming out on the up out of aggressive strategy calls. And again, they waited until the VSC to try and pit Lewis. Well, they got the math wrong and ended up behind him.
Yeah.
And this car just isn't fast enough at that very end, that 10-tenths limit, where it feels like everything they're doing is up against the limit of the car. They're getting everything out of it, but there's no more for it to give. And it's like, even when everything looked throughout practice and throughout the first two stages of qualifying, oh, this is going to be one of those weekends where Ferrari cleans up. And then it just all disintegrated from Q3 onward.
It's weird. I mean, like Hamilton, like for Lewis in particular, it's his 5th penalty in 6 Grand Prix. And besides the marginal one, you could argue, in Belgium, they're all Stonewall. Speeding in the pit lane twice. He jumped the start in Britain. He was lucky not to get a yellow flag infringement during the British Grand Prix as well. He thought he was done, bang to rights in Britain, and he got away with a reprimand on that one. But yeah, putting George out in Belgium was a bit of a marginal one. I still think it was the right decision. I can understand.
I don't
think
it was that marginal, if I'm being honest with you.
Me neither, but people seem to argue that it was, but the others are all Stonewall penalties. Completely unarguable driver errors.
If you need to know how the Hamilton Ultras are doing, they want dive bombs banned because Max Verstappen pulled one of the cleaner Max Verstappen overtakes of the last 4 or 5 years. Well, it was like no opportunity for contact or anything, because that's how he did a perfect block pass
Like,
if you banned those in MotoGP, we wouldn't get any passes at all.
Like,
so it's
they invented the term ethical wheel. It was the cleanest dive bomb. There was no contact. Max made the apex perfectly. What more do you want him to do? Like, oh, just let him back through because he's Lewis Hamilton. I mean, like, what do you want here? Like, it was a perfect overtake.
Careful, Dredd. It's load bearing delusion. And to say nothing of Charles Leclerc, who
started second and was a complete non-factor.
Mid. 10 tons of mid. And you know what? Lewis outperformed him pretty much all weekend, and with that 5-second penalty, ended up behind him in the race.
Yeah. It was half a second at the line because Charles was like 4.5 behind him on the road. Charles started second, and I think what happened with him was that Ferrari were caught in strategic no man's land between a two and a three stop strategy. They tried putting Leclerc on a two and he couldn't do it. And he's had to slow his pace down to try and make this two stop work and save his tires, but then realized they can't do that. So they've got to put him on a three stopper. So he's had the worst of both worlds. Yeah, he's had that dead time trying to save tires and he's just ended up losing a boatload compared to the guys in front of him. It's just a horrible, messy weekend from Ferrari.
Well, and I think it's playing out a lot like 2015, where again, like, Ferrari can do everything right, and the car just isn't fast enough in race trim. Like, they were probably the fourth fastest car in race trim again, despite looking up until the end of Q3 like they were nailed on for pole position.
They're not great on hard tires either. I've noticed
they were piss poor on hard tires. They were, it was 2022 again, Dre.
Yeah.
The car was pretty good on the medium,
mm-hmm.
but then it was not very good on softs. It was atrocious on hards.
Yeah, the medium was their sweet spot. Like, if you put them on the hards, they would all of a sudden, like, if you want the walking example of that, the first stint of that race, Hamilton is all over the back of Max in that fight for second place. Once they get on the hard tires, Lewis is gone. He's completely been blasted out of existence by Max. It's like the Red Bull
doesn't like hards either.
No,
we know that. Like, Max is on the radio bitching about the hard tires, the soft tires, any tires. If we ran wets, Max would have bitched about the wets this weekend.
Yeah,
but it's. There is not a title fight here out of Ferrari. Unless there is a big shift in the pace, because they are always up against the ceiling of the car, no matter how well they execute. Sometimes they execute well enough that if they get a VSC at the right time, they can jump the Mercedes and then try and hold them off. In Spain, they had the speed to actually do that and then pull away because Mercedes were not at their best.
Mm-hmm.
This time, they did that. You've got two compounds of tires worth of difference over Kimi. And Kimi just created the great wall of small Italian child. And he ends up pulling points on both of his title rivals.
Another round in the bin for Ferrari there. And just another round where they're just going to be seemingly in no man's land. The clear number two team overall from the first half of the season, but just ultimately probably stuck in that P2 with no real chance of challenging for bigger honours in that sense, which might get people talking in that Ferrari camp about Fred Vasseur and his future again, because this is not what John Elkann signed for.
Well, if you're going to point the fingers, point them at the engine division. Because it looks like the car is solid and the pit wall has been better. It's been much, much more
much
good
better.
Than there has been bad
yeah,
this year.
Much I improved think it would pit be, wall.
My response to that question would be, hey, you know, we got rid of Martin Whitmarsh at the end of 2013 at McLaren. And what did it do? Jack shit.
What can you do?
It's the engine and...
It's reliable,
the car
but it's
just
not
ebbs
fast.
And flows.
Yeah.
No, it's not.
It's reliable, but it's not fast. It's not the difference maker. And if anything, how many times have we seen them complain about them losing 3 or 4 temps in the straight line because the deployment isn't anywhere near what Mercedes is right now?
We saw it in the race because Kimi would come out of that final turn and then Lewis was on the overtake getting gapped.
Yeah. Also, before we move on real quick as well, I saw the Speedmaster clip of this. Carlos Sainz hit 222 miles an hour at Hungary.
I Good think God. That was just, yeah, I think that was him holding the button just to feel something, because Williams were 10 tons of shit this weekend. They were
awful.
They were terrible.
You know, it wasn't awful, though. Fair play to them. Aston Martin.
Well, I think there's shades of awful here.
Yes.
And we've upgraded from 2010's HRT levels of awful to, like, just generic midfielder awful.
Yeah.
They got to Q2, Dre.
They got to Q2 for the first time this season with Fernando Alonso, and fair play. Best race I've seen from Lance Stroll in a hot minute to actually beat Fernando on track and finish a respectable P13 in the end. Their second best result of the year so far. And yeah, Lance Stroll's 200th start, which makes me feel very old that Lance Stroll now has one more race start in F1 than Alan Prost did.
Every micron of cartilage just left my body.
Yeah, pretty much. But yeah, you know, like, they did say that this package was going to be worth 2 seconds a lap. They weren't bluffing. They probably did make it. Probably was 2 seconds a lap compared to what they were beforehand. It actually looks like an F1 car now. It's a start.
Yeah. I mean, it's everything. They upgraded every aerodynamic surface, the suspension, the crash structures, the chassis. Apparently, they've taken something close to 30 kilograms out of the car, so that's a big chunk of that time deficit.
Huge amount. Probably a second.
It's everything.
That's probably a second right there, just taking the 30 kilos out of the car, most likely.
And a lot of that was up basically on the nose end of the car, which is why they had the kind of fatter nose on the car to pass the crash test. It's still kind of midfield cornering level. The next job is now to get Honda in order. It looks like Honda, they were testing on track today with their new power unit.
Yeah.
And supposedly bump of 40 horsepower. That's probably, given we know what horsepower is worth, probably 6/10.
Yeah, that's
around about there.
That's significant.
The problem is they still have another 2 seconds to go, and then they'll be right as rain.
Yeah, basically. You know, fair play to them. It's a big step in the right direction. They've actually got a functioning car.
They're no longer teetering on the edge of being out of 107%.
Now we're in a new situation where it's like, listen, Cadillac now has a functioning car, but it would be really great if their brakes could stop catching fire.
Functioning. Well, and there's suspension, Dre.
Smooth off, you say.
Double retirement for Cadillac. Now, it kind of feels like now that Aston Martin has climbed from the pit, that Cadillac is now that sort of distant last. I really am curious to see what they treat the rest of this year as a Cadillac from a car development standpoint, because they're like hanging on to the coattails of the midfield when the car works. The problem is that they are breaking, like, the front of their car is made of toothpicks and chewing gum. If it's not the brakes, it's the suspension. If it's not the suspension, it's their front wing failing.
If the first, it's a tale of two halves for me so far, in the sense of, they pretty much hit the ground running early, in the sense of they had a car that was consistently able to make the flag after 3 or 4 weekends. That's great. You've got a car that's reliable. That's step number one. Quite right. Now, the goal is going to be, how do you make your car faster? That's the second major step.
And they've substantially.
It is quicker. It is to the point where they are now genuinely competitive amongst the field. And that is a huge step for Cadillac. But they've got to get over these brake and suspension issues. Otherwise, it's going to cripple them. They're going to have no chance of getting off the bottom against Aston Martin if they're going to keep having their cars blow up.
I think that Perez penalty in Monaco is a death sentence in that regard. Because, like, even
that's
if...
Good. But that was a $10 million parking fine, potentially.
they were not far off of what Williams and Haas were this weekend. Because Williams and Haas were, like, the worst that they've looked in years. I don't think they're getting points this year. Just start finishing races, though. All they have to be this year is a not atrocious last. And they started off that way, and then they got better, and now feels like they're starting to turn into an atrocious last.
Yeah, like, just get off the bottom. Not even necessarily that. Just, if you're going to be last, be competitive in that position. That should be the aim, quite frankly. And, like, that would be a big step in the right direction, quite frankly. So that would be, for me, the plan. But we'll go from there. I mean, before we get out of here, the midfield can wait till another day. Big news we got on the Sunday as well, coming out of the race weekend, that, the Bahrain Grand Prix definitely isn't happening. But wait, it is. It's going to be the Bahrain Grand Prix in Malaysia. Yeah! We're going for one night only. Sepang is back on the menu, which is nice, right? Cam, talk to me.
I don't want to. It's so dumb. It's so stupid. It's giving BMW Sauber Ferrari is what it's doing. Look, I am thrilled. I love me some Sepang. I think the only two people on this earth that like Sepang more than me are Alex Marquez and his number one fan, your brother.
Yes, absolutely.
So I love me some Sepang. I'm glad to see it back. It's just the Bahrain Grand Prix held in Malaysia is the official name. Couldn't you just call it like the Gulf Air Malaysian Grand Prix? Couldn't we make this simple?
I think it's because, from reading between the lines here, Sepang's not making any money on this race. Like, basically, all the ticket revenue is going to Bahrain, essentially.
Yeah, all the hosting fees, everything, it might as well be like it is happening in Bahrain.
Yeah, allegedly, it was Bahrain themselves and the organizers that have been working very hard behind the scenes for the last few months to find a functional way of doing this. For those who don't know, tensions in the US and Middle East have risen again.
Tensions, we call it.
The US have started bombing Iran again. So basically, the Middle East might be a no-go. We found out as well from another series yesterday that the World Endurance Championship, who were going to finish their season with Bahrain and a rearranged Qatar Grand Prix, they've now been moved, so we're going to get the first ever 6 hours of Barcelona and the return of WEC to Monza later this year. So it's going to be weird for the whole calendar in motorsport because, well, WEC finishes their season in the Middle East. Formula One has their Qatar Grand Prix on November 29th, and then they have their season finale in Abu Dhabi a week later. And then in MotoGP, they already had to move Qatar from its original April slot to November 8th to fit it in as a triple header at the end of their season. If that goes, what happens then? Now, we found out via Formula One today via Stefano Domenicali doing a media address that they're going to give it till the middle of September to make a decision on this. If things do not improve and they can't host a Grand Prix in those two countries, they will have two races in Europe to close out the year. The bookies' favorite to take at least one of those is Imola. Imola have stepped up and said, we'll take a race in December. Although, good luck with that. That track could be ice by then.
You know, Pencil and Max Verstappen is the favorite with the chain tires, like when he was climbing that mountain in the Red Bull shoot from like 10 years ago.
Man's prepared. I mean, Imola has stepped up and said, listen, we'll host a race in December if it helps. And I think that will happen because, as anybody knows, Stefano Domenicali is from Imola. He's an Imola boy through and through. He will absolutely throw them a bone to get him a Grand Prix if it means... Because, look, if you're in a racing series, you want to get as close to your schedule number of races as possible for TV contract reasons. You promise the TV guys X number of races, you deliver them. And there's no guarantee there's an act of God clause in there either, because you just don't know how the world's going to play out. Imola is one of them. Allegedly, Istanbul have said, hey, we'll come in early if it helps, basically. Jason the Jet says Portimao. Portimao is likely not going to happen. According to John Noble at the race, they want to renovate the track a little bit in preparation for their full-time return in 2027. So they wanted to obviously just spend some time making sure the track is pristine before F1 rolls up again for the first time in 6 years. Portimao, probably not. Istanbul, maybe, basically. They are, they've always been prepared to step in if in, in a tough situation. They've been very willing over the years to do so. So we might still get 23 Grand Prix this year. It's looking like we're going to get 23 with Sepang, but we might end up losing one more at the end of the season, depending on what happens there. As for MotoGP, if you want my guess, I think Valencia just doubles up. We've seen that before, where during COVID, they doubled up in Valencia. I think that could easily happen again. Just keep everybody there for a week, an extra week. Still run the test at the end of the season, as you normally do. If they want to get to 22 races, that's the easiest way. Just double up at Valencia, I think, would be. Although, would you want to race on Valencia in the last week of November?
I wouldn't want to race there in perfect conditions.
Yeah, like I said this to my brother the other day, and his response was, doubleheader at Valencia, fuck that.
No, entirely accurate. And I'm a savant there in Taurus Trophy. It's not that I'm bad at that track in video games, that I hate it.
Yeah, it's just shit for racing. And it's been shit for since the four-stroke days. It's never been a racist track, Valencia. It's too tight, it's too slow. And you got the only way of possible is block passing them. I can't stand Valencia. Never have. But that's the latest on the calendar. We're getting a Bahrain Grand Prix in Malaysia. It's giving very Tour de France right now, really, when you think about it like that, starting in a different country and what have you. That's going to be on October the 4th. That now makes it a triple header inside the middle of Baku for the Azerbaijan Grand Prix and Singapore's Grand Prix, which means that's now a triple header, which means 9 Grand Prix and 11 weeks to close out the year.
Yay.
That's a lot. And I want to say before we go, to the people out here that are like, oh, what are you complaining about? That's awesome. Have some fucking empathy for the people that are actually in the paddock. Like, these guys are having to put their lives on pause to do shit like this. I know, like, the moment this news drops out,
later into the year than was planned.
Allegedly, from what I was told, most of the F1 teams gave their crews an extra week off in April because they knew this was probably coming, that the back half is going to be absolutely brutal. Like, that's the teams trying to throw their employees a bone. I know a lot of people act like F1 is this highly privileged sport. It's an honor just to be there. And that, you know, it's a blessing that you get to take part in the pinnacle of motorsport. Two things about that. Number one, the money is not as great as you think it is. Just trust me on that. Again, I have people that have worked in F1. They're not. The bank manager isn't calling them sir on the way in, I can assure you. In fact, this is why F1 has lost so many people to the automotive industry in recent years, because they look after their staff, they're not traveling for more than half the year, and they're able to pay them far bigger salaries. They're not cost-capped. There's a thing you've got to consider. Second of all, it is fucking exhausting traveling for 8 months of a year, and I think, Cam, I think it's fair to say Formula One is becoming more and more a year-round sport as it goes on. It's like soccer, yeah. You know.
I mean, if the summer break is smaller than it used to be, the winter break is smaller than it used to be, we've got minimum 7 to 8 extra races compared to what we used to have.
Compared to 20 years ago we had 17 F1 races. Yeah. Now we have 24.
Yeah, and through the advancements as well in the development of the cars, I mean, you're not testing out on track, but that you have to double down on the testing in simulations, in the wind tunnel when you're allowed to under the capped regulations. The engines are far more complicated than it used to be. Those take far more development and fine-tuning every minute of every day at this point, because we're halfway into this season of these new power units, and we're still finding new shit to break and new ways to use them.
As Kira quite rightly puts in our chat, we're racing in December now. That's now the norm. December F1 races is now a common part of the calendar. I ain't forgotten 2021. We raced 2 weeks before Christmas. Like, There was a Christmas tree in my living room as I watched Max Verstappen win the 21 title, which is crazy to me. Like, and we're racing in December, and February races are now not uncommon. We've seen Grand Prix weekends in February now. And if you are someone in the paddock who is part of the traveling circus, you've probably got a partner and kids at home. You probably can't see them all that often. Sometimes you're spending nearly 3 weeks straight on the road working these 100-hour weeks and then traveling to the next venue and then doing that all over again. That shit is exhausting. Just because it's a good job in your eyes doesn't mean it doesn't come with hardships and difficulties, right? Like, people who sit here and say, oh, yeah, oh, it's great. Look at all this racing we get. We love racing, right? We want more. I will always have empathy towards the people that put the show on for us. And
I'm sure doesn't happen without them.
And I'm sorry. 9 races in 11 weeks is fucking ludicrous. That's too much. Because it's not like NASCAR that can do that schedule and you're traveling nationally. And even they have the burnout on their end going through it. And they're only a national series, let alone triple headers that include going from fucking Vegas to Qatar. Like, you don't have to be an A-level geography student to work out that is a crazy amount of travel, a crazy amount of air miles to rack up. And then you've got to be on point from Monday through to the following Monday all over again. I'm like, I'm glad that everybody has agreed that 24 is the human limit of how many races we can have on a calendar. And I'm glad that is apparently held up in the last Concord agreement that they sat down and agreed, because I think this sport was already a breaking point with 24 races. And it's ironically, half the time we've had a 24 race calendar, they've not actually gotten 24 races in because of COVID, flooding in Imola, and now
the universe trying to tell them something.
I never complained about having 16, 17. Hell, 2012, we had 20 for the first time. And I was like, you know what? I can take 20, but that should be the limit. I remember Martin Whitmarsh saying that weekend, if we have any more Grand Prix, we're going to have to hire a second crew. And now we have crew rotation in Formula One for that very reason. Yep. Sky, for example, no one works every race anymore. You may have noticed that if you watch your F1 coverage on Sky. Even Crofty, the Iron Man of the paddock, who did every Grand Prix, he only does 21 rounds a year now. He takes three races off now for Harry Benjamin. Like, we had Natalie Pinkermanker this weekend on Sky, for example, but it's normally Simon Lazenby. There's now much more rotation. I think no one does more than 16 Grand Prix as a regular anymore on the F1 TV side, as Kira points out in the chat as well. There's reasons for this. There's a human limit to what these guys can do. And if you can't see that, you're not paying close enough attention, as far as I'm concerned. Well, that's the last F1 race before the summer break. We are now in the summer break. We're in the middle of the summer shutdown. We'll be off for 3 weeks, F1-wise. They're back for the Dutch Grand Prix at Zandvoort at the end of August. I think it's August 23rd, I want to say. It's also a sprint weekend because it's their last time they're going to be on the F1 calendar before they go away permanently. Good. Zandvoort did nothing good for F1, and I don't care what you tell me. So we'll have like a mid-season F1 review between now and F1 return in a couple of weeks' time. We'll also do a little cleanup episode on some of the other minor stories that have come through in Two Wheels and Four between now and MotoGP's return, which is back at the end of next weekend for the British Grand Prix at Silverstone. Love me a good Silverstone. The best bike we could.
I enjoyed Zandvoort in 2023. It was one of the craziest fucking races I think I've ever watched.
I'll give them that. That was a great Grand Prix. That was fucking crazy. And sometimes you need a bit of... like, that was the most on-off rain I've ever seen. Mad shit. But yeah, we'll be back for a little mid-season news roundup next week on M101. But until then, I've been Dre Harrison. He's been Cameron Buckley. Thank you very much for watching and listening along, and we'll catch you guys soon.
time to go back to looking at these liveries.
Get that man some baby oil.